This meeting of the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors will now come to order. Please rise for a salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We will begin our meeting this morning with a presentation from Matt Machado on the Stanislaus County Safety Leadership Recognition. Well, it says Matt Machado, but,
I'm not Matt Machado, but good morning.
There's been a change in schedule.
Members of the board, Patty O'Thomas, Jack Doring. I'm David DeLander, Deputy Executive Officer from the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. I would like to just make some comments before Matt gets here. The Department of Public Works has really done a great job in implementing their Incentive for Safety program. And today, Matt will be presenting their goals and activities that they have done since the initiation of this program in July 1, 2007. You'll see during the presentation that the goals will be outlined, the activities that they have to support the goals will be outlined. They'll show us the results, and then they'll show us comparisons for a three-year period. So with that, Matt, please make your presentation.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Ms. Thomas, Mr. Doring. I'm Matt Machado, Director of Public Works, and with me today is Laura Janovich. She is our safety coordinator, and we're here today to share some successes of our safety incentive program. I would like to especially thank Laura and Diane Ha for the development and implementation of this safety program. It's exciting to see this program come together. The numbers speak for themselves, but what's also exciting is to know what's going on to get to those numbers, and it's through Public Works staff's commitment to safety, continuous improvement, and accountability that has really created these successes for us. And specifically, I'd like to thank our Roads Division, because they're the folks that are in harm's way on a daily basis, but through regular training and their commitment to the job, they've really carried us to get to this level. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Laura, who's going to present our incentive program with a PowerPoint. So Laura, take it away.
Thank you. The Department of Public Works is a very diverse department in the aspect of the hazards that the employees are exposed to daily. We had a need to develop and implement a comprehensive safety program that would address each and every one of these hazards. A key element in the success of the program is the support it received from the top. Our director, Matt Machado, implemented a hard hat policy in November of 2007. This policy exceeded the general safety orders and the minimum requirements set by Cal OSHA that state an employee exposed to falling or flying objects shall wear a hard hat, end quote. The bright white hard hat of the department also made the employees more visible to oncoming traffic. The new policy states any public works employee in the public right-of-way at a job site will wear a hard hat. Our deputy director, Lori Barton, revised our accident review policy and the members of the accident review committee. The new policy created a sense of consistency and accountability. It established the ability to determine causation, develop preventative measures, and decrease reoccurrence of the same incident. The committee members were to include the deputy director, the operations manager from the roads division, the shop manager, the roads division supervisors, union representation, and the department's safety analyst. Our assistant director, Diane Ha, was key in the development and implementation of our safety incentive program, which brings us to our slide presentation. The program was implemented July 1st. The goals of the program were to reduce the number of incidents and accidents, reduce the severity of these incidents and accidents, reduce the costs, reduce work days lost, promote employee safety, and to build a camaraderie in the department. We're very diverse and we're in four separate facilities. Bingo is what we came up with. This safety bingo is an email that's sent out daily. It's sent in the email form, and it includes the number of consecutive days accident-free, which today we are 95 days accident-free. It has the name and location and job title of the individual bingo winners. It includes the bingo number and a daily safety bite, which we'll have a demonstration of what that is as well. The bingo prize winners are awarded a $25 gift card from a pre-selected group of locations. And this is a sample of a safety bingo email. We are now 113 days consecutive days accident-free. 113 is our record, by the way. We have two bingo winners to congratulate, and of course these are fictitious. Sally Sue, who is an assistant engineer at Morgan Road facility, and John Doe, who is a Roads Division supervisor at our Patterson facility. The next lucky bingo number is B15. This is an example of a safety bite. And the key thing is this is daily. So this is on everyone's minds daily. When the apparent temperature reaches 90 to 105 degrees, take extreme caution when working outdoors. Have enough drinking water to consume one cup every 15 minutes. Avoid those caffeinated and sugary drinks. Have a shady spot available if needed. And severity was one thing we needed to address. Increased awareness meant decreased costs, and site hazard assessments introduced us to a lot of specific training. Confined space, trenching and excavation, and fall protection were brought to us from the Safety Center, Inc. in Sacramento. We provided the facility, so it cut down the cost for providing that training. The temporary traffic control zone, we tapped into a grant through our union. They even provided us with lunch. All we had to do was provide the facility. The first responders operations class was funded by the Stanislaus County Safety Council, and because we're members, we had a discounted cost per person that attended that. And the number of accidents, 2006-2007 were 21, 2007-2008 were 11, 2008-2009 were 6, and yes, we still have 28 days left of this fiscal year. Incurred costs, 2006-2007, well, you see the numbers, $468,375, and then 2007-2008, dramatic change, and that's when we implemented our program, and then 2008-2009, and these are incurred costs. And I asked, thank you, Peggy Hunsinger, for this information, I asked her for a definition. Total incurred is the amount paid plus the amount that is estimated to be still outstanding, so it's a reserve. This is paid cost. So for the incurred cost for 2006-2007 was $468,375, but the actual paid cost so far is $215,000. So that's the difference between paid and incurred. 2007, $25,140, 2008-2009, $11,479. And this is the cost of our program. When I asked what is our program in 2006, a lot of people didn't know. The comments were, oh, I just know that periodically I get a jacket or I'll get a gift card if we don't have any accidents. So I knew we needed something that everybody was going to be able to understand so they could be a part of it. So July 1st, 2007, we implemented the Safety Bingo. That year we spent a little bit more money, but we got that returned. And 2008-2009, $4,375, I purchased six more bingo gift cards yesterday, so that has increased by $150. And then a summary, the injuries, the incurred costs, the paid cost, the program cost is all there listed for the years.
That concludes our presentation. Are there any questions, comments from the board that we could address?
Questions from the board? Supervisor O'Brien.
Not necessarily questions, but just comments of what a great job. And this goes for your department as well as all the other departments. We've seen a significant reduction of injuries, and that is just so great for the employee. No one wants to be injured and sitting at home. It's done great things for the budget. In fact, I think this coming fiscal year, we're not charging workers' comp to the departments. And you talk about a savings. We need every penny we can get right now, and all the departments, all the employees of Stanislaus County has helped tremendously. So congratulations to your department and congratulations to all departments.
Thank you.
Supervisor Grover.
This is a wonderful report, and I think it's one worthy of all of our departments to consider. Really appreciate you taking the initiative on it, and I think it just shows that if we can get in the front of our people every day to start the day, this idea of let's think safe first, it follows through. So thank you, and thank you, Supervisor O'Brien, for keep heading this safety thing.
Yeah, I do have a certificate to present, I suppose, to you. Okay. I do have a certificate here recognizing how the safety improvements that you've made. Is this thing working okay? Yeah, I know I credit Supervisor O'Brien for just getting in the middle of this and really making quite a difference on this, but besides being good for our employees, that they're not injured on the job or off work for any amount of time, that it has saved the county considerable amount of money, too, at the time that we need it more than ever. So really good work, and then not only your department, but all the departments have made great strides forward. So it's really, we're working in the right direction. Let me present this to you. Do you have any further words you'd like to say?
Sure. I think, you know, we appreciate the award, and I think that, you know, the safety program has really helped morale, you know, when people are safe, they're happy, and it certainly has paid financially. And so we're happy also to reap the benefits of the financial benefit along with the morale boost. So thank you for the board's continual support, and we appreciate that and looking forward to continuous improvement beyond. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Our next presentation will be by the court-appointed special advocate of Stanislaus County for Children.
Good morning, Chairman DeMartini and Board of Supervisors and staff. My name is Kathy Hallinan, and I'm here to step in at the last minute for our dynamic executive director, Steve Ashman, who is unfortunately stuck in traffic, accident-related traffic. But I'm here very proudly as the current president of the CASA Board of Directors. For those of you who may not be aware, Court-Appointed Special Advocates, or CASA, is a national organization. We have a local chapter here in Stanislaus County that is in its seventh year. It was brought about in our county by Chief Justice Ronald George, who was interested in having this program in place throughout California. It is an amazing program. And I come to you in a special capacity, really, because I'm honored to be part of this. I am an attorney that works primarily representing children in dependency. These are children that have been abused, neglected, molested, and they are stuck in the foster care system, either temporarily while their parents are getting through programs, because, as you may be aware, the whole goal of the dependency system is to reunite the family. So the kids have to go and through foster care while they're waiting for their parents to kind of go through their programs, whether domestic violence, substance abuse treatment, etc. During this process, we have children that are lonely, scared, away from their families, away from their usual social environment. They're moved from schools. They often have behavioral issues. They often have numerous placements, multiple foster homes. And one of the few consistencies that they have in part in this traumatic period of their lives is the opportunity for a CASA advocate. Currently, we have CASA, we have 30 advocates serving about 100 children in Stanislaus County. We still have 500 children that are waiting for an advocate to be assigned to them. It's important for you to know that the advocates that work in this program are these incredibly dedicated people who volunteer their time. They volunteer lots of time. They have to go through an extensive training program. They observe court. When I'm in court, I see them sitting there and they're watching how the process works. They provide information to the court with regard to the children's health care needs, with regard to their education needs. They advocate to make sure that the children receive all the services that they require. For example, I have 112 kids on my caseload. The CASA advocates generally have one or two. And so it's a different level of attention. And most importantly, they provide this one-on-one stability for the kids. And I can give you an example just from my own caseload that I had a boy who was, I had him for 5 years, and when he turned 18, the only people that celebrated his 18th birthday were his CASA advocate and his attorney. So there are many sad stories. We currently have about 30 new advocates that have, or volunteers, including Supervisor Grover's sister-in-law. And so we're very grateful to these people who donate their time and energies. It is a generally self-sustaining program. We get very little funding from the state, and we have a huge in-kind component, which is very impressive. And I want to thank at this time the board, because we already enjoy the support of the board, and Rick Robinson in particular, as staff, because you provide for us an in-kind donation of office space, and we appreciate it. We are going to be having a fundraiser. I believe all of you have received packets. With me today are two dynamic board members, Susan Azevedo and Marie Asali, both of which I believe have provided the board with packets at some point or another. So our fundraiser is June 24th. We are honoring Congressman Cardoza. We are honoring Mike Tazzi, who has been a steady support and advocate for this program in our county. We're also advocating our fine bench, which is Judge McFadden and also Commissioner Williamson. And it's really important. We have this great speaker. It's Justice Moreno from the California Supreme Court, who is deeply committed to the children in this system and who is a confirmed speaker. He will be there, and we hope that you will be too. Thank you for your time.
And thank you for your presentation. Questions from the board?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Our next presentation will be from the Behavioral Health and Recovery Services and the Sheriff's update on the Methamphetamine Task Force.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen, Ms. Hill Thomas. I will be sharing this presentation this morning with Sheriff Christensen. I'm going to go ahead and give you a little bit of history about the Methamphetamine Task Force, and then he will give us a current update. The Methamphetamine Task Force was established perhaps about a year and a half ago. It represents a collaboration between the Healthy Community Group and the Safe Community Group. It originated as part of our required alcohol and drug prevention plan, which the state requires us to develop. It's a 5-year plan, and that allows us to receive funding for our prevention services. This plan was developed from input from a broad group of stakeholders and community members, and it started in 2006. The goals of the plan are considered to be the community priorities related to substance abuse prevention. Why focus on methamphetamine? Of course, I think we all have a sense of that being a problem in our community. It ended up being one of the three central problem statements from this planning process, in that too many people are using methamphetamine. Methamphetamine impacts every aspect of the community in Stanislaus County. Law enforcement, social services, all health providers, educational institutions, and the Department of Environmental Resources, because they have to clean up the lab dumps. It affects our families, our children, our economy, and our surroundings, just everything about the quality of life in our county. To begin to address the meth problem, a community task force was developed. This concept was patterned after a similar effort in San Diego County, where it was called the Methamphetamine Strike Force. They have a little bit different problems, but the general concept is very similar and has been a very successful endeavor down there. The basic idea is to understand all the impacts of methamphetamine abuse in the community and to understand all the efforts that are being made to prevent it, treat it, and deter it. Understanding the way in which it impacts our community is actually central to how effective this task force will be. We have a goal of having a coordinated, visible approach so we can be effective as possible together to combat this problem and look for ways to support one another and leverage all of our resources. Our hope is that this partnership represented by the Meth Task Force will lead us to continued efforts in the area of public safety, prevention, and treatment of methamphetamine abuse in our community. One of the most recent prevention efforts had to do with the sponsoring of Cranked, which was a hip-hop spoken word exploration of meth addiction in our drug culture, which was at the Gallo Center. 5,000 youth attended that, and we're very proud to have that had come to our community. Sheriff Christensen has been co-chairing this meth task force with Denise Hunt since its inception. He will present some information about the current status of this project.
Thank you, Madeline. That was outstanding. I'm not sure there's much more I can add that Madeline hasn't already shared with you, and I appreciate the partnership and collaboration, and that's really what I want to emphasize, is that this is yet another example of the great things that are happening in Stanislaus County with regard to partnerships, working together, collaboration, and sharing the resources and costs of getting the job done. This is one of these things where we work directly with the community and try to specifically target not only young people in the prevention and education area, but also our suppression efforts, our enforcement efforts, which I have said many times, we're never going to be able to arrest our way out of methamphetamine and gangs. Methamphetamine is a scourge that negatively impacts our families and our children and our way of life and our economy and leads to many other criminal activities. You know, every arrest we make, we see some element of methamphetamine. And so by bringing this group of people together and identifying indicators in the community related to meth by working together to try to come up with better ideas on how to deal with the problem, I think we make progress and we demonstrate that Stanislaus County and Modesto really is a great community. We have a lot of great things going on. And while we have this challenge, we find better ways to mitigate it, and we do our work by serving the community and doing our best to provide people with the resources they need to break that cycle of addiction. So I'm very pleased to be able to participate, and it's a great partnership, and we wanted to let you know what was happening in the community.
Any comments from the board? Okay, seeing none, thank you for your presentation. We will now move to public comment. This is a time when any member of the audience can address this board on an item that is not on the agenda. I do have one request to speak from Deborah Harper.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Harper, and I currently reside in Modesto, California. Just like to say, this isn't about me, but I do love Stanislaus County and the city of Modesto and every priceless human being in this county and the city. I may not agree with everyone. The law librarian at our law library has decided that I cannot share the privileges of the law library. She fabricated false information to prevent me from using the library. She made everything personal. I tried to stay above board and professional and, you know, keep it neutral, and she made everything personal. And therefore made it a battle between her as an individual and me as an individual. So I didn't keep too much ground on that one. When I was suspended, I requested that she put me, or I requested to gain appropriate access. And she put me on the agenda without notifying me. And she once again made it personal and said she didn't need to personally invite me. And I tried to discuss the fact there was no discussion for her. She just did it, and that was the way it was, and I have to bite dust. But I am still here, and I still need to use the law library. So to make a huge story short, a suspension is an individual item. It's not a general public item. And in order for somebody to know that they're on the agenda, they need to be notified. On the first suspension, MPD Officer Ulrich led the receptionist to prevent me to use the library in that department, in that suspension. The receptionist is smart. He stayed neutral and pushed it up to the board, chairman of the board of the law library. Well, that turns out to be Mr. Bruce Ramsey, who is in the law office of Ramsey and Ulrich. Now, I'm going to guess that Officer Ulrich and Attorney Ulrich may or may not be related. And the point being is that we all know each other, and we're all practically neighbors. So we have word of mouth and a real personal gist in this community. Mr. Doring, I thank you for your advice. I am still looking for an attorney. While I'm looking for an attorney in the smaller community, I still have to function as a human being. I still need to access, you know, public places and function as a human being. So, therefore, I'm still requesting access to the law library, which I can gain information while looking for an attorney. Because our community is small, it's very difficult to find an attorney that's unbiased, that will work for free. Pro bono is a term in itself that implies unethical stuff that I just don't want to go there on. So I just prayerfully and respectfully, you know, say it's very difficult to find somebody that will work for free and unbiased. Okay. Since the point that I've been suspended and have gone public with the suspension, one of the bus drivers allowed me on the bus, sold me a ticket, a day pass. I put my bags to the side of the aisle where with some people it's appropriate. She then told me inappropriately in a caused a scene that she didn't have room for me on the bus. And why didn't I figure that out? I peacefully communicated to her that she needed to communicate to me before I got on the bus that she didn't have room for me. She immediately called her supervisor, furthering the scene, and then on her way driving into town after she decided that she wasn't going to sit there at the bus stop any further because the passengers were becoming hostile and blaming me for the hostility when she made the choice to sit there at the bus stop. On the way, she flagged a police officer down, and I am strictly trying to get to my destination peacefully. He tells me he wants to talk to me. He didn't say, get off the bus, I need to get off the bus. He wants to talk to me. It's all personal. You know, it's just unfortunate. Okay? Because everyone knows everyone in this town, we're all practically neighbors, this can initiate a lynch mob effect. And my question is, can we establish a standard where we can peacefully disagree with each other and respectfully disagree with each other and not have to run somebody out of town or shut them out of the public access or public transportation everywhere? I traveled down south. I lived down in San Diego County, and I traveled 1 year to San Alejo Campground, which is in Cardiff by the Sea. While I was checking in the kiosk there, a homeless man was entering the campground. They had a walk and camp thing that they set up. The kiosk man treated this man with respect. He had urinated over himself. He was just, you know, not up to speed that day. And the kiosk gentleman treated him with respect, greeted him in a very respectful manner, rented him the campground because evidently they had campgrounds set up for people that could multiply and use it legally and camp illegally. And this campground is a beautiful park. You have to go there to get the chance. So the point being, is there some way we can establish a way we can disagree with each other without running somebody out of town, without, you know, making it personal, respectfully? Mr. DeMartini stated at one point that he felt that an out-of-town attorney was mocking our system. The experience that I've experienced just specifically to the law library is that our system is mocking itself in this community. And how can we get past that? I mean, we have to establish a reasonable standard for everyone on this planet and in this community. Respectfully, Mr. O'Brien disagrees with bureaucrats in Washington about the health care, the residency program being reduced, possibly on appeal. Can we disagree? These bureaucrats oversee a lot of people everywhere, and they know what they're doing. And I've documented a few issues at our current, respectfully, health care in the county that's being affected in that area. And rather than disagree and call people bureaucrats, can we bridge that gap and possibly deal with the imperfections that other people, you know, pointing out, and raise the standard of this community and make it shine and not hang each other out to dry? It's just very disconcerting. I still go to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Attorneys will go to the Declaration of Independence. As an average human being, if everyone can read the Declaration of Human Rights, it would very much bridge the gap, you know, of making everything personal versus keeping it above board and staying neutral and respecting each other. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else from the audience who wishes to address this board on an item that is not on the agenda? If seeing none, we will move to the consent calendar. We have pulled agenda item A5 for a separate vote. Is there anybody on the board who wishes to pull an item from the consent calendar besides A5? Okay, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, a motion has been made by Supervisor Chiesa, seconded by Supervisor Grover to approve the consent calendar. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion is carried 5-0. We will now move to agenda item A5, approval to accept the clerk recorder's certified statement of the results of the election. Lee?
Good morning to the board, to Chairman DeMartini and everyone else up there. I'm here to bring before you certification of the election of May 19th, the statewide special election. Stanislaus County in this particular election had at that time registered 216,847 voters. Of that amount of voters, we had a total cast of 58,340 votes that were counted in this election. I know there was a lot of talk about a low turnout. The percentage of voters casting votes was actually 26.9%. In the last 10-15 years, there were actually 6 elections that had a lower turnout. So it wasn't the lowest turnout, although it wasn't a very high turnout. The amount that I think is an interesting number to look at, how many of the votes were cast by mail as opposed to those cast at the polls, the difference was 80% of the votes were cast by mail in this election. And that that figure is not only unique to us, it's the highest we've ever had, but I think it's very important in that the respect that I know this board wanted this to be an all-mail election. The cost of the election was primarily at the polls and was the smallest amount of voters. It was less than just about 10,000 people went to the polls. The rest of all of them went and voted by mail. Certification of this was made on May 28th. We were the first county to return our election night results on election night, and we were one of the first counties, I believe we were the first county, to return our results of the election. So for that, I thank our very hardworking staff that did an excellent job, and I'd love to be able to say I did it all, but hey, they did it all. So I really, kudos to them. I know that the importance and the interest of this board is in what was the cost of this election. So we've been working on the numbers of the cost of the election. We originally asked for up to $720,000, which was the amount of our last statewide large election, this type of election. Because it was a statewide special, there are some rules that we are allowed to implement, and we implemented all of them we were allowed to. We had in this election 225 precincts, of which 79 were polls. which meant there was a super consolidation of the polling locations. Even with that super consolidation, we had some polls with as little as double digit people going, like, you know, less than 20. And others, the maximum I think we had was about 300 in that range. So the total amount of this election that we're looking at is less than $500,000. The number is ranging somewhere between 450 and 500,000. We're finalizing all of those amounts right now. So that is a fairly substantial savings from what we thought it might be. However, of course, it was a surprise special election, and these were numbers that were not anticipated in anyone's budget. And for that reason, you know, I know our office cost a little bit more than we had anticipated this year. If you have any questions, I'm delighted to answer them.
Any questions from the board for Lee? Of course, the state is going to reimburse us for that election.
We're told that.
Well,
I understand our board members were up there asking them. Board Member Piazza was up there asking for that money. So what did they say to you? Coming in a minute?
$500,000 that you estimate that you spent, how much could we have saved had we done an all-male election, in your estimation?
You know, I have those figures in front of me. If you look at the supplies alone for the polls were $116,000+. So about $116,000 there. We had personnel issue at the polls. I think that was connected with that. Sheriff's Department and other things that you need because of the polls, a little bit more than that. Probably be between $160,000 and $150,000 would have been saved. We don't have the final figures.
No, I just wanted to get an estimate there so the public would know. Is that I had sent a letter to the governor requesting an all-male election. I got a response back about something that didn't have anything to do with what the letter I sent him was about. Well, you've done a good job, Lee.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that since you've been clerk recorder, you've done a special election for us every year.
Just about.
We look forward to next year's special election.
The next election we have coming up is the consolidated district election. That will be on Tuesday, November the 3rd, 2009. I do have the various dates on that if anyone's interested. We do have a date of August 7th, which is the last date, which everyone's probably interested in, that you can be a candidate for that election. So anyone running in that election would have to be registered with either their district office or our office by August 7th.
Any further questions from the clerk recorder? Okay, thank you, Lee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our motion to accept the clerk recorder's statement.
Also move.
Second.
Motion has been made to accept the clerk recorder's statement of results of the election by Supervisor Grover, seconded by Supervisor Monteith. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion's carried 5-0.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lee. We will now move to agenda item D1, Community Development Block Grant Consolidated Plan.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Kirk Ford, I'm your Planning and Community Development Director. And our consortium, our Community Block Grant Consortium, received an additional allocation of about $670,000 from Housing and Urban Development. And with me today is our community development manager, Aaron Farnan, and he's going to tell you a little bit about how we're going to use that money. In each of the cases, we have to bring back a modification to our consolidated plan and our annual action plan, and that's what we're here to do today. So, Aaron, take it away.
Good morning, board. I'm Chairman DeMartini, Ms. Thomas, and County Council. Today, we're recommending applying for Community Development Block Grant Recovery Act funds. It's under the HERA Act, American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. They're appropriating about $1 billion towards this activity. We're eligible for just under $670,000. 70% of this funding has to be allocated to serve the low and moderate income population. An example of that is a family of four that earns below $47,700 would be eligible. We partner with five consortia cities, Ceres, Newman, Oakdale, Patterson, and Waterford. And the Recovery Act purposes are to stimulate the economy through measures that modernize infrastructure, including housing. One of those areas that we're focusing on is solar power infrastructure for energy efficiencies, and also an internship program to help provide educational opportunities. With the solar efficiencies, we're requesting to help retrofit neighborhood stabilization fund units that we're going to acquire. And these efficiencies will help offset inflation for first-time home buyers. It will also create local capacity through employing displaced workers, and will give them capacity to install these solar improvements. Over the next 24 months, this program would help hire five full-time contractors. That would also allow about 21 units to be retrofitted with solar improvements and other energy efficiencies, as well as coordinate with Project YES, which is other stimulus money, to hire interns over the next 24 months part-time. Those interns will have an opportunity to work from a city perspective, county perspective, as well as a contract agency like the Housing Authority. The funds will be distributed as follows amongst the consortium members. These funds will help with the internship positions as well as hiring the contractors to do the work. This work will be overseen by the Housing Authority, and we'll have oversight of that agency, and they will hopefully retrofit about 21 units. As mentioned, Stanislaus County will oversee the program, and the Housing Authority would deliver the activities through RFPRQ process and hire local contractors and those that were displaced. And if they don't have the skills, we would work with agencies as, like the Alliance WorkNet to get them the skills to do that, or MJC with their education program. This program helps meet the priorities of the board. It includes helping to remove blighted structures from the neighborhoods, providing those units with retrofitted improvements to offset inflation for first-time homebuyers. It'll partner with the Housing Authority, Project YES, and the five consortia cities. And this is an expedited program, which has to be done over the next 24 months. We'll help improve an efficient delivery of the services, and these improvements will help offset inflation. In order to submit this plan, we're required to prepare and submit a substantial amendment to the consolidated plan for 07 through 12 and the annual action plan of 08-09. There's a required 7-day public comment period. We conducted a 14-day public comment period, and we have to submit CDBG certifications as well as American Recovery Act certifications. Today's staff recommends closing the 14-day public comment period for the CDBGR amendment for the 07-12 consolidated plan, as well as the 08-09 action plan, and recommend approval of the amendment of this plan that will allow us to incorporate $669,134 for CDBGR funds. Staff also recommends directing the CEO officer to sign the SF-424 form, as well as the CDBGR certifications. Authorize the Director and Planning Committee to Development to execute related program implementation agreements and contracts with the Housing Authority and Consortia City, as well as Project YES, in an amount not to exceed $669,134. And if there's any questions at all, I'll try and answer them for you today.
Are there any questions for Mr. Farnan or Mr. Ford?
No. Supervisor Chiesa.
Aaron. There's many programs coming down. What's the difference between this program and the other one that there's?
The neighborhood stabilization one? That one's going to be purchasing and acquiring the units and rehabbing them, but not providing the energy efficiency retrofit. So with this funding source, we'll be able to retrofit those units at the same time. So it's kind of exciting.
They can't run concurrently?
They can't, because the HUD staggering the release of these funds, so we have to get creative and have staff and try and make it work together.
Thank you.
Further questions of staff? Before we close the public comment period, is there any member of the audience who wishes to address the board on this issue?
Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for action.
Okay, I'd like to move we accept the four staff recommendations.
You're second to the motion. Motion's been made by Supervisor Chiesa to accept the staff recommendations 1 through 4 and seconded by Supervisor Grover. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion's carried 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have both scheduled matters today. We will move to correspondence.
This board has received a letter of introduction from the Sacramento Consul General Carlos Gonzalez Gutierrez from Mexico.
Report of the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received a notice from the State Water Resources Control Board regarding petitions for temporary change of water from Placer County Water Agency to the San Diego County Water Authority.
Report of the Agricultural Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received a letter from Barkowitz, Koenig, and Shannon regarding petitions for temporary transfer of water to the 2009 Drought Water Bank.
Refer the Agricultural Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received a letter from NI Industries, a TriMass company, regarding their plans to extend a layoff of 10 to 22 positions scheduled on May 29, 2009 to June 12, 2009. At its facilities at 5300 Claus Road in Riverbank per the Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act.
Refer to the Alliance WorkNet and the Stanislaus Economic Development and Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a letter from the Stanislaus Consolidated Fire Protection District requesting dry period funding for fiscal year 2009-2010.
Refer to the Auditor Controller.
This board has received a letter from the Union Pacific Railroad regarding their plans to abandon and discontinue service on the McHenry Industrial Lead from Milestone 2125 near Escalon to Milepost 2643 near McHenry Avenue.
Refer to the Department of Public Works.
This board has received a notice from the California Department of Water Resources Flood Protection Corridor Grant Program requesting comments regarding a request from River Partners to DWR to provide grant funding for ecosystem restoration and flood water attenuation project on the federally owned San Joaquin River National Wildlife Refuge property along the San Joaquin River in Stanislaus County.
Refer the Agricultural Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures and Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisors reports?
Yeah.
Supervisor Chiesa.
I just wanted to let everyone know we had a State Supervisor Association board meeting. And as Lee had alluded to earlier, there was a lot of talk about trying to get reimbursement from the state and also not to borrow our money, the Prop 1A funds. And I guess realistically, when you're dealing with a broke state, there's not a lot of money for reimbursements, although there's a strong push because they have promised it, whereas 1A, they are legally allowed to borrow the money and pay it back within 3 years with interest. I thought it was interesting at the board meeting, there was a push that didn't go anywhere. Actually, it didn't go anywhere, but there was a push to recommend raising the VLF back to its vehicle license fee back to its original level pre Schwarzenegger, and it didn't go anywhere if 1A funds were borrowed. But I thought that was pretty interesting. The supervisors are now in taxing mode, and I voted against it, figuring that my board would back me up on that one. So, but again, it's gloom and doom up and down the state, and you know, with the state being in its fiscal situation, I don't see it getting better anytime soon. So I just want to tell you about that.
Yeah, I don't either. The state has to get their financial affairs in order, and they cannot balance their budget by robbing the local governments of the funding that we need to run our programs. Any other further
Board reports. I'd just like to make one comment. Supervisor Monteith and I went to the airport last week where they had the groundbreaking for the new airport hangars. This is a project that was funded through Stanislaus County's share of the property tax on aircraft and is being put to good use. The project came in more than $100,000 under budget, and this these hangars will provide a home for aircraft in our area that will generate not only rental income but also property tax revenue as we draw aircraft in from other airports. This is a great improvement for the airport, and the property tax money is now directed back to the airport for infrastructure improvements will greatly help our airport in generating revenue and making the airport more attractive for people to bring aircraft in from other areas. In the future, we hope to put in a pump for landscaping so we don't have to use city water anymore, and perhaps someday we'll build some more hangars. I just wanted to report that. Any other reports? Okay, we will move to legislative and fiscal management report.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Patty Hill Thomas. Following on Supervisor Chiesa's comments, it is budget time. I know your board members are involved, our statewide associations, our department heads, and our staff, not only tracking but trying to engage in meaningful discussion as the state faces its continued dire budget situation. Just as a note, our county proposed budget hearing is scheduled for next Tuesday morning, June 9th at 9 a.m. in these chambers. The county's proposed budget is on the county's website at www.stamcounty.com/budget, and so we encourage the public and others to be able to have an opportunity to look at that online. Our county staff met on May 28th with each of our delegation offices in Sacramento to provide them information about the budget and keep open a communication pipeline on the state budget. Our legislative delegation has been very engaged and very open to listening to suggestions and seeking information. Thank you, Supervisor O'Brien. On Friday, you encouraged us to create a super list of underfunded and unfunded mandates, programs provided by the county that are not reimbursed. We talked about one earlier today, the election cost. That information was distributed to Assemblymember Tom Berryhill and the rest of our delegation. So thank you, Supervisor, for assisting with that. You've all been engaged in one way or another. The Budget Conference Committee has been meeting. Today will be an important day in Sacramento. First of all, just in a few short minutes at 10 a.m., the governor plans to address both the Assembly and Senate about his latest budget proposals. And following that, there'll be a response from the Democratic legislative leaders and then shortly thereafter, the Republican legislative leaders. What's really important is then the Big Five are scheduled to meet again today to try to continue to tackle this very difficult budget situation. Really critical to us as a county government and other public agencies is the cash situation in the state. It can be described as nothing short of dire. If there's not a budget deal reached by the 1st of July, there's suggested that there'll be a $24 billion cash shortfall, and it looks like the most the state can borrow from their own estimates is $10 billion. As you know, the largest part of the county budget is for state and federally mandated programs, and the county is not able to cover those short program cash shortfalls, yet we maintain the requirement to provide mandated programs. We're very concerned about the cash as well as the budget reduction plans. It's very clear that cuts will be made, and while we present our proposed budget to you next Tuesday, we know that much more work will be needed to occur over the summer. A bit of a bright spot, however, we want to stay optimistic, but we know it's very much an uphill climb, is that Senate Bill 684 by Senator Cogdell, freezing the negative bailout, which particularly affects Stanislaus County, starting in the 2011-2012 fiscal year, actually passed the Senate, is on its way to the Assembly. Again, this is encouraging, but we know in these dire fiscal times that will be an uphill battle. On one non-budget matter, but a bright spot for our community, we're going to invite everyone to attend the dedication ceremony of the Regional Water Safety Center, the Empire Pool, on Friday, June 12th. The official event starts at 6 p.m. at the corner of I Street and State Route 132 or Yosemite Boulevard to dedicate the new swimming pool and safety center that will be funded for the next 3 years, its operating costs, by donations from the community of Empire. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for the CEO? Okay, seeing none, we will adjourn to closed session. Mr. Doering.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have a conference with legal counsel this morning to discuss existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision A. Two cases will be discussed, the first being Tara White et al. Versus County of Stanislaus et al., Stanislaus County Superior Court, case number 623131. And second case is the Committee Concerning Community Improvement et al. Versus County of Stanislaus et al., and that's United States District Court, Eastern District of California, case number CV046121, LJODLB. We do not expect a report out.
This meeting stands adjourned.